Hi, this is Billy from the Main Street Opera House, and you're listening to Tales from the Mouse House.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land.
Welcome to Tales from the Mouse House, a podcast dedicated to the Disneyland Resort. We'll offer up some news and updates on the resort, give you ride reviews, some tips and tricks for resort guests, let you in on some of the secrets of the resort that we like to call hidden treasures, and even discuss some of our favorite places to eat at Downtown Disney, Disneyland, and California Adventure.
Welcome to episode 2 of Tales from the Mouse House.
Well, we just got back from a recent visit to Disneyland.
Yep, it was a quick trip, just the weekend, but it was lots and lots of fun.
Yeah. Even though it was basically just a turnaround trip, we still had a great time. The challenging thing about these quick trips is trying to figure out a way to maximize the entire visit. Hey, that could be one of the tips and tricks in an upcoming show.
Yes, it could. This time we stayed at the Paradise Pier, and it was really nice. In fact, I think for those quick trips, the Paradise Pier is really good.
Yeah, but the only thing that was really rough was that if we forgot something or wanted to go change our clothes, it's a bit further to walk than just going over to the Grand Californian. But you're right, it's still very nice. Although we did have a rushed weekend there, it was still a lot of fun. The key to these quick trips is to keep in mind that you're not going to have enough time to visit every attraction in the resort. So pick out your favorites, hit those first, and if you have time left, visit the others. The cool thing about this trip was that both parks were open really, really late, so we actually got to do a lot more than we had planned.
Yes, we did. But by the end of the day, I was pretty tired.
Yeah, very, very tired. Had to ice the knees, because remember, we're old folks.
No, we aren't.
Yeah, well, I feel old sometimes. Continuing on with the show, I'm going to kind of jump off topic a little bit and talk about the Lost finale. Now, I know that the final episode of Lost was a few weeks ago, but I still think that it deserves at least a little bit of a mention from us. We're pretty serious Lost fans. We've seen every single episode probably more than twice, so I think that we're pretty good about knowing what's going on the show. But with the finale, and I know that a lot of people out there hated the finale. They didn't understand the finale, but I really liked it. I thought that even though it didn't wrap up the entire show, it didn't answer a lot of questions, I still think that the important questions were answered.
I do too.
I don't need to know the minute little details like, you know,
Hurley and Ben.
Right. How did Hurley and Ben die eventually?
How long were they left on the island?
Right. I mean, that kind of stuff, in my mind, was not really important to the outcome of the show. I know that the final scenes where they were in the church and they kind of dipped really deep into the spiritual aspect of the show probably put a lot of people off. They probably felt kind of ripped off at the finale, but I thought that it wrapped up the show pretty nicely. And one of the keys for me was that, no, it didn't answer all the questions, but it left enough of it open for you to interpret your own way. And I think that's the magic of these types of shows.
I agree. Because I was able to use my imagination. And then what I really liked about it was how it started with Jack's eye opening and it ended with his eye closing. I thought that was really neat.
Right. And from what I understand, they had that final scene planned from the beginning, right? They had it mapped out. The stuff in the middle they filled in. And according to Matthew Fox, who played Jack Shepard, he knew all along how it was going to end. And what he meant by that was that he knew what the final scene was going to look like. That was with his eye closing. So that being said, on with the show.
Oh, don't forget that Amanda's coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Forgot all about that. Yeah, my daughter Amanda is coming to visit us. in July. She's a sophomore in college, but she's coming to visit us for a week in the summer, and we are going to take her to Disneyland for her very first visit.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you're looking forward to it because we get to go back to Disneyland.
That's true. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing her too.
Right. And it's going to be interesting to see how she reacts because she's never been to Disneyland before. So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, a young 20-something views Disneyland for the first time. And maybe on our show in July, we'll have her as a guest host.
Yes, she can tell you exactly what she thought of her first visit to Disney.
Jelly Dude, stay tuned for Disneyland Resort news. My dad Crush totally loves this park. Hey, did you ever find Nemo?
Disney just announced the dates the original Star Tours will close at Disneyland. Star Tours Disneyland closes on July 27th in preparation for an amazing, highly anticipated retooling of the popular Star Tours attraction based on the iconic Lucasfilm Star Wars franchise. According to Walt Disney Parks and Resorts Chairman Jay Rasulo, an all-new 3D version of the tremendously popular Star Tours attraction will include immersive new elements that will take guests to many familiar places in the Star Wars galaxy. Star Tours 2.0 is slated to debut in 2011.
As many of you know, there are lots of changes going on over at California Adventure, and that ties into the Halloween time. Disneyland announced changes to Mickey's Halloween party for the holiday season. This private costume trick-or-treat party enjoyed at Disney's California Adventure, formerly known as Mickey's Trick-or-Treat Party, has moved to Disneyland Park. The new event has some really cool benefits. Access to Disneyland Park. With a ticket to Mickey's Halloween Party, you'll get access to nearly all the attractions Disneyland has to offer. From the classic attractions in Fantasyland to the Halloween-themed attractions like Space Mountain, Ghost Galaxy, and Haunted Mansion Holiday. You also get earlier access. The party starts at 3 p.m. on Tuesdays and 4 o'clock on Fridays. The official event starts at 6 p.m. though on Tuesdays and 7 p.m. on Fridays and Halloween. There will also be tons of treats available, more trick-or-treat locations, which again is more treats. You get exclusive access to Halloween Screams. Mickey's Halloween party guest will have exclusive access to one of the most popular fireworks spectaculars ever. Halloween Screams. Mickey's Halloween party will be offered again Halloween night every Tuesday and Friday in October, and annual pass holders can start purchasing their tickets on June 4th. For more information, visit the annual pass holder website. General sales begin on July 16th, and for more information on the general sales, you can visit www.disneyland.com.
Canadian-born radio and television personality Art Linkletter passed away on May 26, 2010, at the age of 97. Art was a good friend of Walt Disney and was personally selected by Walt to host the live coverage of the grand opening celebration of Disneyland on July 17, 1955. Art was inducted into the Disney Legends program in 2005 and was asked about his participation in the grand opening. "I went out to the Disneyland site with Walt one time," he recalled. "I didn't want to spoil his enthusiasm. But after we had driven for about an hour south of Los Angeles, into the country in the orange groves, I thought, geez, who's going to come down here?" Luckily, Art's initial doubts proved unfounded, and on July 17, 1955, he announced to an eager television audience, "Well, this job in the next hour and a half's going to be a delight." And then the show opened, and history was made, Art later stated.
Continuing on with the theme of changes and makeovers, there's going to be a huge makeover to the Disneyland Hotel. The pool area is getting a whole new look, including a brand new pool, all new immersive water play area, and a complete redesign of Neverland Pool. Plans also include a new restaurant and bar and retheming of the hotel's three guest towers. The biggest transformation, and what I'm looking forward to most, are the changes coming to the pool area. With a nod to the iconic original park signage, Disneyland will be spelled out in familiar blocks atop a platform supporting two huge water slides. The large slide will be 26 feet high and will stretch 187 feet before it plunges into the splash pool below. Reminiscent of the original monorail station at the Disneyland Hotel, at each slide's entrance will sit a replica monorail car
that guests will glide through as they twist and turn their way to the pool below. The pool will also feature a third two-lane mini slide, perfect for little ones, which is just 3.5 feet high and 19 inches long. And that's not all. Two new dining locations will be introduced at the current location of Hook's Point, Croc's Bites and Bits, the Wine Cellar and the Lost Bar. A new smart casual dining concept will feature Tahitian architecture that is reminiscent of the 50s and 60s era of the hotel and the original Tahitian Terrace restaurant in the Disneyland Park. A new bar will draw on the adventure theme from the Jungle Cruise attraction. The new water play area, pool, and dining locations are scheduled to be completed by the summer of 2011, and the remodeled Neverland pool is slated to be completed by the summer of 2012. The hotel's three guest room towers will be renamed to reflect Disneyland's park distinctive lands. The Dream Tower, currently under renovation and scheduled to be completed in 2010, will become the Adventure Tower. The Wonder Tower, next to undergo transformation, is slated for completion in 2011, will be the Frontier Tower. And the Magic Tower will be finished in 2012 and will become Fantasy Tower, a large marquee featuring classic artwork for Adventureland, Frontierland, and Fantasyland will identify each tower. Now that you've heard all these changes, what are you most excited about?
Disneyland is teaming up with Verizon Wireless for the Color Connection Sweepstakes. Verizon customers who sign up on My Verizon and register their friends and family number will be eligible to win a once-in-a-lifetime Disneyland experience. The grand prize VIP package, valued at over $4,000, will include a 2-night and 3-day stay at a Disneyland resort or resort area hotel, 3-day Disneyland resort park hopper tickets, reserved viewing of the World of Color show and entrance to the Verizon private party in Disney's California Adventure Park, a Samsung Reality smartphone, and a $75 Verizon Wireless gift card. The contest will run from May 1st through July 31st, 2010. You can enter the contest by visiting www.verizoninsider.com/Disney.
And if you don't win the contest, you can still see the World of Disney as it debuts on June 11th. No, I'm sorry, not June 11th.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
June 11th. Now for a construction update on the Buena Vista area. The trolley tracks and the brick streets have been laid in the Hollywood backlot. During busy times, bring your patience with you as half the street is blocked and it is very congested.
Disneyland is a wondrous world of magic, adventure, and fun. Every day, thousands of visitors pass through the gates, leaving their everyday world of worry and stress behind, transforming them once again into playful kids. But did you know that there are many, many hidden secrets living at the Disneyland Resort? Some are easy to discover, while others are hidden or easily overlooked. In this segment, we'd like to discuss what Joyce and I have come to call the hidden treasures of Disneyland.
Have you ever visited the Disneyland Resort and seen some people staring pretty intently at something? Perhaps pointing at an obscure-looking stain or a mark on the wall and smiling? Odds are these happy folks are hunting hidden Mickeys. What's a hidden Mickey, you ask? Well, a hidden Mickey is a partial or complete impression of an image of Mickey Mouse placed by the Imagineers and artists in the designs of Disney attractions, hotels, restaurants, and other areas. The image can take the form of Mickey's profile or the popular tri-circle Mickey head, you know, with the round head and round ears. Hidden Mickey started out as an inside joke among the Walt Disney Imagineers. They would include an image here and there and occasionally as an inside joke only they would understand. They would subtly hide them in plain sight, a Mickey image in the finishing stages of the new attractions. Soon these images were discovered by park visitors, and the hunt began. There are several books on the market that help you spot the elusive Mickey, and the one that we use is called Disneyland's Hidden Mickeys, A Field Guide to Disneyland Resort's Best Kept Secrets by Stephen M. Barrett. This book plays out like a scavenger hunt, giving you points for each one you find and hints on where to find them. Currently, there are a little over 600 known hidden Mickeys throughout the Disneyland Resort, including the resort hotels. Some are pretty obvious, while others are, well, let's just say they're less obvious. I found my first hidden Mickey by accident, which I'm sure is the case most of the time. I think it was our second visit to the Disneyland Park, and we were over in the DCA at the Hollywood backlot area, and I happened to look up at the flagpole above the animation studio. Lo and behold, I thought I saw something sitting on top. I took out my camera, zoomed in really, really close, and sitting right there on top of that pole was the classic Mickey head. I asked a cast member, and they proceeded to tell me and Joyce all about the hidden Mickeys throughout the resort. That set in motion our hunt obsession. Now, every time we visit the resort, we dedicate a little bit of time to hunting those hidden Mickeys. They're in some of the most unlikely places, too. So, should you care to begin your own hunting expedition, here are two freebies to get you started. The first one is on the flagpole I mentioned earlier. The second one is even more hidden. As you take the Disneyland Railroad, just after you depart Mickey's Toontown Station, you'll pass a billboard on your right. Looks like the classic American Gothic husband and wife farmer with a pitchfork painting, only this is done in true Disney fashion. It's actually a billboard for the Agro Future in Tomorrowland. On the right side of that billboard are images of purple grapes. Look closely and you'll see the Mickey.
As you ride the Matterhorn, you may notice a pickaxe and a crate in one of the caves. These items are well lit and seen in a snowy area. The crate says Wells Expedition and is a tribute to the late Frank Wells. Frank Wells joined the Walt Disney Company in 1984 with Michael Eisner as the president. Immediately before joining the company, he climbed the tallest summit on each of the seven continents. His book, Seven Summits, about his adventures is a very interesting book. Frank died in a helicopter accident in 1994, and the tribute on the Matterhorn was placed there soon after.
Okay, here's a hidden treasure for the codebreakers out there. At the beginning of Tales from the Mouse House, you hear Walt Disney's famous speech that he delivered on July 17, 1955, welcoming everyone to the grand opening. But did you know this speech is still heard inside Disneyland many, many times per day? Head on over to Disneyland Railroad's New Orleans Square Station. Across the tracks, you'll see a recreation of a train depot, and you'll hear the unmistakable tap, tap, tap of a Morse code machine. That tapping you hear is actually a portion of Walt's opening day speech.
For those of you who think that It's a Small World attraction is the closest thing to world peace, then why not pay tribute to the lady who helped Walt Disney make the concept come to life? Mary Blair designed the attraction and helped build it for the 1964-65 World's Fair. Fellow Imagineer Raleigh Crump created a special doll that looks like Mary and had it placed in the attraction. As you travel through the European Room, look at the Eiffel Tower and notice the doll holding the balloons partway up the tower. The Mary Blair doll is dressed in a jumper with boots. The doll was put there before Mary's passing in 1978.
For those of you out there who love Finding Nemo, Disneyland has just the ride for you. The Finding Nemo submarine voyage is a fun trip through scenes from the Pixar animated movie. But for those of you like me, this attraction can be, how can I put it delicately, a bit of a challenge. See, I'm not what you'd call a small person. I'm about 6'2" and weigh a bit over, well, let's just say I weigh more than a 6-year-old. Hey, I'm an ex-Scottish athlete, not small. Anyway, the actual submarine is quite compact. It's the same subs from the original submarine voyage at the park. Very tight fit, small seats, and the viewports are very low to the deck.
And you have a very good story, if you want to call it good.
Well, it's an interesting story anyway. It was our first visit to Disneyland, and they had just opened up the Finding Nemo submarine voyage ride. We waited in line for, it was about an hour and a half at that point. And by the time we got up to the actual sub and we were being loaded in, you have to, for those of you who have never ridden the ride, as to get into the sub, you have to walk down through the porthole on the top of the sub. Well, there's a deck that sits just before that, and it's kind of sitting over the porthole. So as you crawl in, you pass through the porthole. I mean, you pass through the deck. So as I'm waiting to take my turn to travel down the spiral staircase.
We were the last ones to get on the ride.
Right. We were the last ones to get on the ride. The submarine starts to move a little bit. And I'm looking up and I see the deck coming closer and closer to my neck. In fact, I would say without exaggeration, it was within 6 inches from taking my head completely off. So needless to say, this next hidden treasure, although very cool, could have come quite a bit sooner. The Marine Observation Outpost, or MOO, is a great way to enjoy the attraction and keep your head where it belongs. Simply ask the cast member at the ride if you can visit the MOO, and you'll be taken to a super secret area near the end of the queue. This neat little room is designed to look just like the submarine, only for regular-sized people. There's some comfy seats in there facing a pretty large view screen or viewport. Once you're securely inside, the attraction flows exactly the same as the sub version, only much roomier. Of course, you may have to wait a few minutes to ride this ride as it only holds about 5 to 10 people, but typically not too many people know about this. So next time you want to ride the Finding Nemo submarine ride, don't lose your head. Check out the Moo.
The statuettes of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, located near the castle, were anonymously donated to Disneyland in 1961. The statues are made of marble and are all nearly the same size. However, since Snow White's statue was roughly the same size as the dwarfs, a visual effect called forced perspective was used. Major elements of the scene were scaled down and angled to give the illusion of distance and height. When you view the scene from the wishing well, you see Snow White in perfect princess height, way up on the crest of the waterfall. In true Disney fashion, wishes not only come true for those who throw coins into the well and make a wish, but the wishes and coins make the dreams of children come true too.
Right. Disneyland actually retrieves all those coins and they donate them to a charity, don't they?
Yes, they do. There are signs outside the well that say what the charity is, and they're also in Downtown Disney. So if you ever want to make a wish, remember it's going to a good cause.
Right. And the forced perspective effect is actually used throughout the entire resort. If you notice on Main Street USA, they use the forced perspective effect on all the buildings there to make it look taller than they actually are.
Same with New Orleans Square.
Now's the time for some ride reviews.
Toy Story Mania is located in Paradise Pier area of California Adventure Park. This 4D Midway-style game is inspired by Disney Pixar's Toy Story movies. As we shared in our last podcast, the game was recently upgraded and introduces the new Toy Story 3 characters. As you enter the ride queue, you'll notice Mr. Potato Head entertaining the soon-to-be riders. Due to popularity of the ride, be prepared for a long wait time. And remember, the ride does not offer the FastPass benefit. At about the halfway point of the queue, riders will pick up their glasses. As you board the 4-seat car, 2 per each side, the competition begins. When you enter the game, notice the old-fashioned board game such as Candyland. Then you're spun around to the practice game board and then on to the game. Using a spring-action shooter, aim at the rings, plates, so on and so forth, to earn bonuses and surprises. Each of the other 5 games differs each time and lasts about 30 seconds each for a total of 5 minutes. One hint to remember is keep shooting to earn extra points. Look for the Easter eggs too, like bees and balloons, and shoot them before your competition gets them. This ride is for nearly all ages. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, this ride has a fun factor of 5.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion. Without a doubt, one of the most popular attractions at the Disneyland Resort is the Haunted Mansion. Located in the New Orleans Square area, the Haunted Mansion is a ride that takes you on a tour of the Gracie Mansion, inhabited by 999 happy haunts. The attraction opened to terrified guests in 1969 and quickly set attendance records that wouldn't be matched for nearly 18 years. As you approach the attraction, you're awestruck by the attention to detail the Imagineers paid while designing the outside of the mansion. The Haunted Mansion is really an impressive structure, and although it does have an eerie look about it, you can't help but really like it. As you pass through the entrance, which is a pair of highly ornate gates, you'll walk through the mansion's well-tended courtyard. My yard should be this well cared for. As you wind your way through the queue, you'll pass some tombstones on your right and pay close attention to the names, and enter a large queuing area. On the left, just outside the queuing area, you'll find a mausoleum of sorts with tombstones in the wall. Again, pay close attention to the names here. You'll see some pretty funny ones. As you finally make it to the foyer, you'll be greeted by a rather glum-looking cast member, as well as hear that famous tune for the first time, Grim Grinning Ghosts. After the foyer fills, you'll be brought into an octagonal room, also known as the Portrait Gallery, the Stretching Room, the Secret Room, the Expanding Room, or the First Class Lounge for Oceanic Airlines. Okay, the last one was just to see if you were still listening. The cast member will encourage you to drag your bones to the dead center of the room. Then it happens. The lights dim and the music gets a bit louder as the chilling voice of Paul Frees begins his introduction. Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion. I am your host, your ghost host. Then he taunts you by saying, is this haunted room actually stretching, or is it your imagination? All the while he is speaking, the room appears to stretch, and the portraits get much longer, revealing a much different image. Paul continues with, and consider this dismaying observation. This chamber has no windows and no doors, which offers you this chilling challenge to find a way out. Of course, there's always my way. At this, the lights go completely out. Thunder and lightning crack, and above you, the ceiling is changed to reveal a body swinging, hanging by the neck from a rope. And cue creepy female scream, as well as the inevitable guests screeching in concert. Then guests are led down a narrow hallway, with portraits transforming on the right. And dead ahead of you, get it, dead ahead, are statuary busts of a man and a woman whose gazes seem to follow you no matter where you go. Next, you'll be put into your doom buggy, and the real fun begins. The cars are lifted up into the upstairs areas of the mansion, and you'll pass by a long-forgotten funeral, complete with a coffin that seems to be keeping someone in against their will. Along your journey, you'll come across a crystal ball containing the floating head of Madame Leota, the medium, as she summons the mansion's spirits. Then you'll pass perhaps one of my favorite scenes in the attraction, the ballroom. Here you'll see happy ghosts dancing and really partying like it's 1899. All right, 1999. Whatever. Look closely at the dining room table. There's a hidden Mickey on it somewhere. Hey, I've already given you two freebies. This one you'll have to find on your own. And if you do spot it, drop me a line. I'd like to know how many of you out there can find this one. As you pass through the party, you're whisked through an attic displaying the many gifts and wedding portraits of our Black Widow bride. As your doom buggy flies out an attic window, you wind your way down to my favorite scene in the attraction, the graveyard. You'll pass the poor caretaker and his dog as they shake with fear at the sights of what's going on. Various ghosts are all having a grand time singing and dancing to the song Grim Grinning Ghosts. On the left, you'll see a rather unorthodox band playing, complete with a Scottish bagpiper. On your right, you'll see five animated singing busts singing, guess what? Grim Grinning Ghosts. As you get ready to leave the graveyard, you'll hear your ghost host once more tell you what he neglected to tell you earlier. Be careful, there are hitchhiking ghosts just up ahead, and you may just pick one up. And sure enough, as you near the end of your journey, your doom buggy swivels left and you see a mirror in front of you. And who's sitting next to you in your buggy? Well, a hitchhiking ghost, of course. As you depart your doom buggy and head up the moving sidewalk, you'll encounter a tiny ghostly figure of a woman who will announce,
hurry back, hurry back. Be sure to bring your death certificate if you decide to join us.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean, Disney put a lot of thought and attention to detail in this attraction. The history of the attraction dates back to before Disneyland was even built, when Walt hired his first Imagineer, Harper Goff. Goff developed a black and white sketch of a crooked street leading away from Main Street by a peaceful church and graveyard, with a rundown manor perched high on the hill that towered over Main Street. Although not included in Disneyland when it opened, Walt assigned Imagineer Ken Anderson to create a story around Goff's idea. Since 2001, the Haunted Mansion is transformed into the Haunted Mansion Holiday during Christmas, based on the Disney and Tim Burton animated movie The Nightmare Before Christmas. Disney closes the mansion down in September to redress for a few weeks, then reopens with an all-new Christmas-themed Haunted Mansion. This is probably my all-time favorite time to visit this attraction, probably because my very first visit to Disneyland was in mid-September 2007. Yes, I'm 45, and yes, I was 42 when I visited Disneyland for the first time. But that's a story for another show. And the Haunted Mansion was all decked out with Jack Skellington and company. If you've never visited the Haunted Mansion while it's decorated for Christmas, I highly recommend it. Last year, in true Disneyland fashion, the 40th anniversary of the Haunted Mansion was celebrated. Special commemorative trading pins were sold. All sorts of merchandise depicting the big celebration were also sold. In fact, for the D23 Expo last year, Disney sold limited edition Hitchhiking Ghost D23 pins, a real collector's item. And here is a hint at a special unseen hidden treasure I'll give you now instead of making you wait until the next show. As you exit the attraction, on the right you'll see an exit gate leading from the entrance. Go through this gate and take the path to the right side of the mansion. At the end of that path, you'll find a super secret pet cemetery. Pretty cool. In an I'm sad for the deceased pets kind of way. On a scale of 1 to 5, whee! Haunted Mansion earns a 5.
In this segment, Al and I will review places to satisfy your hunger and put to rest those grumbellies so you can get back to the magic.
Okay, so I admit I'm not one of the healthiest eaters in the world. But when you visit the happiest place on Earth, you're really not thinking of eating tofu and drinking green tea. Or maybe you are, so who am I to judge? So anyway, the first time Joyce and I visited Disneyland together, the first place we went to was Disney's California Adventure. It was late in the afternoon and we'd driven from Arizona, so we wanted something to satisfy our hunger attack and we stumbled across the Corn Dog Castle. I thought, what the heck? I like a good corn dog and they're probably not very big, so they'll tide me over until we decide on dinner. Well, we purchased our meals on a stick and I was blown away. This wasn't your average everyday run-of-the-mill corn dog. No, sir. This was the Mac Daddy of all corn dogs. These things were huge and so good. So this became our traditional first day meal every visit to the Disneyland Resort, until they closed up. Not sure if it's for good, but at least while they're re-imagineering DCA. So we went on the hunt for another source for our corn doggy goodness. Enter the Little Red Wagon corn dog stand just outside the Photo Pass store at the end of Main Street, USA, in Disneyland. Now this isn't your typical food stand. It's actually a vintage red truck with a tiny kitchen in the back of it, about the size of a broom closet. Now, from what I understand, the Little Red Wagon, newly refurbished, has been a fixture at Disneyland for some time. But since we had the Castle Corn Dogs, we never paid it much attention. So our last visit, we decided it was time to bite into another Disney corn dog. We gave it a try. And it's not bad. It's not nearly as big as the Castle's, but they're still good. Plus, the atmosphere is a great added bonus. What more could you ask for than to buy a great corn dog from the back of an antique truck? Now, as with almost everything inside the resort, this meal isn't cheap. At around $6, all you get is the corn dog and a small bag of chips, but honestly, it's well worth it. Little Red Wagon corn dogs will leave you full and glad you found them.
La Brea Bakery and Cafe, located in downtown Disney, serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. For the purpose of this review, we'll be reviewing their breakfast entrees. They proudly serve Starbucks coffee, and it is one of the best cups of coffee you'll find in the area. They have both a full-service sit-down restaurant and a counter service for pastries and coffee. The entrees are served with country potatoes, organic mixed greens, and a choice of La Brea bread. The patio offers nice views of the Grand California Hotel, World of Disney store, the tram area, and it's close to the entrance of the park. The average cost of breakfast for an adult is $13 and does not include a beverage. Kids' meals start at $6.25, and also it does not include the beverage. The food and service is always wonderful.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Tips from the Mouse House.
The best view of the fireworks is from Main Street in front of the castle. However, everyone has the same idea. Try viewing the fireworks from Fantasyland or in the area between California Adventure and Disneyland. If you view from Fantasyland, remember the rides are closed during the fireworks, but an advantage is being close to the attractions when they reopen.
Okay, so we've all been there. If you've ever visited the Disneyland Resort, I'm sure you've noticed that a bottle of water, although very necessary, isn't exactly cheap. After a while, it can get a bit costly, especially if you're hydrating more than just yourself. If you're not careful, you can find yourself laying flat on your back because you've neglected to drink enough water. So, if you're on a budget and would rather spend that $3 plus at a shot on trading pins, try this. Take in your own water. Simple. Disneyland allows you to bring in food and beverages, so bring as many as you can carry comfortably in by yourself. And on those hot days, try freezing a couple of bottles of water the night before and then taking them in. By the time you want to drink them, they should be on their way to that slushy quality H2O elixir.
Planning your visit to Disney? If you're a Costco member, check out the member benefits and exclusive offers such as the character breakfast packages. When booking, you'll be required to pay a deposit, and the balance is due a month before arrival.
This is how we actually did our very first visit to Disneyland, was through Costco Travel. It's really quite affordable this way, and it makes it a lot easier. Plus, for the pin traders out there, you get a special commemorative Disneyland pin from Costco. And yes, we're pin traders, and again, this is for another show. Now, we've been in this situation many times while at the Disneyland Resort. We're in the middle of our day of fun and stumble across a gotta-have trinket or article of clothing at one of the shops inside the park. But we think, I don't want to carry that around all day, so we'll come back later. Guess what? We get back to the room and realize, darn it! Guess what we forgot to do? Fear not, dedicated Disneyland Resort guests. Go ahead and purchase that special item when you see it. Just ask the cast member if they would mind sending it on to your room. As long as you're staying at one of the three Disneyland Resort hotels, your I've Got to Have It special purchase will arrive at your door the next day. Pretty cool.
And then you won't spend the next 3 days or so looking for that bag and not remembering which store you found it in.
Mm-hmm.
If you're visiting Disneyland with a small child who does not measure up to the height restrictions, and there are two adults in your party who like to ride roller coasters, take advantage of the Switch Rider perk. No need to wait in line twice. Just ask the cast member at the beginning of the ride queue for the pass.
For those Disneyland Resort guests with little ones, no, I'm referring to little children, not grown-ups who feel like they're little children. Disneyland offers a very special place for you. Located just off Main Street, next to the PhotoPass store and across from the Little Red Wagon corndog truck, is the Baby Care Center. The center offers guests with little ones the opportunity to let their toddlers run free, play, or just relax or nap in a quiet environment. The center is also a great and cozy place to clean up your child and change that rather unclean diaper. There are also accommodations for nursing mothers to tend to their babies' grum bellies. And if you need diapers or cleaning supplies, you can purchase them inside the Baby Care Center as well.
And when visiting the Baby Care Center, be on the lookout for a baby portrait of Walt Disney.
The Treks in Sci-Fi Podcast.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Sci-fi entertainment news and commentary.
I am Locutus of Borg.
Star Trek episode analysis.
Captain of the USS Enterprise.
Pokey religions and ancient weapons.
Collectibles, toy, and prop reviews.
I am to misbehave.
The weekly Treks in Sci-Fi podcast with your host Rico at treksinscifi.com.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. And what we have coming up in future shows...
In July, Amanda will be visiting Disneyland with us for the first time, and we'll try to do a podcast and have her take part in it.
And we'll get a first-timer's perspective. Hopefully. She may have to jet off someplace exotic. She is a college student after all. If you have comments or questions for us, you can email us at talespodcast@cox.net. That's talespodcast@cox.net. We'd love to hear from you. If you have show ideas or if you have a review of your latest trip to Disneyland, feel free to drop us a line. You can leave comments or reviews for us on iTunes.
Thanks for listening. And have a magical day.
Bye.
When the crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake,
spooks and mockers wane and wake,
happy haunts materialize,
and begin to vocalize, grim grinning ghosts are out to socialize.
Now don't close your eyes and don't try to hide,
or a silly spook may sit by your side,
shrouded in a dark disguise.
They pretend to terrorize, grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.